Before we get started with today's episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, let me talk to you about Draft. Draft.com. Draft in your app store. And it's a great way to play fantasy sports. They do snake-style drafts just the way you like them. They got PGA, NBA, NHL, NFL. They'll have baseball when it's going on. You know, they got the best ball formats. They have them all. But it's a fun, fun way to play. When you use promo code SDSports when you make your deposit, you get entry to a free $3 tournament of your choice. So go check them out. Draft.com, draft in your app store, play the snake style drafts, or play the brand new auction style drafts. Tons and tons of fun there. There's even rumors they might do NFL postseason best ball drafts, which would be an amazing time. So go check them out. Draft.com, draft in your app store, promo code SDSports for entry into a free $3 tournament of your choice. Also, Jesse and I would really, really appreciate it if you can give us a rating and review on iTunes. Help us go a long, long ways in building the podcast to bigger and better heights. And last but not least, go check out FantasySports.com. They're crushing it in the NFL and PGA games, ownership projections. They listen to and read all of the content week in and week out, give you everything you need to know. And they got some really cool things coming up for the upcoming PGA Tour season. Already been chatting with them. We're going to have some promo codes for you, all kinds of cool stuff. So go check them out and then sign up with our promo codes when they become available for all their new tools. And it'll be awesome. Now to this week's edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast, recapping the match, recapping the fall swing, and giving you the 2018 Hero World Challenge PGA DFS DraftKings preview.
Lay. Sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah. All right, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up.
And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast. This week, we will preview the Hero World Challenge, all 18 golfers in the Bahamas. We'll recap the match, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then we will talk about the fall swing, a little brief recap. So if you guys missed anything, some hot golfers, some young golfers, all that good stuff. You can find me on Twitter at BDentrick, the podcast at Always Press DFS. And my co-host, as always, he's on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing, man?
I'm doing well, dude. Couple weeks off for us. And back this week just because it's a special golf tournament and kind of the end of the – really the year for golf in general.
Yeah, it's the official end. Like, it's so weird saying it's – you know, technically we've played events for the year, but we haven't. It's just – yeah, it's right. A little detailed deal. But, yeah, end of the year, we will have a year – a preview for 2019 coming up in the coming weeks. We do want to take a little bit of a breather here and there until we get going again, but we'll have that coming up for you guys here soon. But Jesse, let's start off with the match. Tiger, Phil wins, of course, on the 22nd hole, I guess, technically, is the way they want to call it. There's a lot to go off of here, so we're just going to kind of spitball it back and forth. Give me your initial thoughts on this whole thing.
Yeah, so I was never into it from the beginning, but some of my buddies decided that, you know, they got all pumped about it. So it kind of got me a little bit of pumped. You know, like my next door neighbor, one of my best friends, he said he was going to, you know, buy it and wanted me to come over and watch it. So long story short, I went over there and watched it. And, you know, from the beginning, it was odd. And the guys who are casual golfers, casual golf fans, not hardcore golf fans like myself and you who followed week in and week out, were like, this is weird. Because, you know, they hit tee shots and then you see them walking down the fairway with just basically bullshitting with each other. And it was literally most of the time them walking together or apart and talking. It was odd, man, from the beginning. I lasted myself 9 holes. And decided that I had enough. The golf wasn't very good. Nobody was making any putts. They weren't hitting it that close. Tiger was spraying it. I guess I kind of quit out too soon because I guess it got good not too long thereafter. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And then also, too, the fact that Bleacher Report just gave it away for free on their website. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that was a question. I think I was going to bring it up first. We'll talk about the golf. It was – very bad golf. I guess the best way we can say it, this was It's kind of like WWF or WWE. This was built for entertainment, not for the actual technique involved, I guess, is what we were going for. But I'm with you. I was pumped for the idea of seeing two guys face off, and maybe if we have different guys, it could be more fun, a different format. There's a lot of ways to go about it. But, like, we know we love the Ryder Cup, the head-to-head aspects of that. But it's because there's something, like, on the line. Sure, $9 million on the line. I'm sure that means a lot to anybody, and you can believe it for what it's worth. But when you got, you know, the situation they have there, I'm not going to say it was rigged, but you see some of the missed putts and some of the things, like, to keep it close, to go extra holes. It seemed off, but it might have just been bad golf because they were playing horrible at times. And I guess that part of it sucked. The Bleacher Report part was hilarious because I don't want to bring Barstool Sports into this, but they do their streaming thing. And their first one, they ever did the same thing happen, and then they figured it out. It's just funny because all these places think it's so freaking easy to stream stuff. And for $20, it seems like it should be real easy. And next thing you know, everyone's getting it for free. Yeah. So they spent almost more time going on Reddit forums and other forums to block people from giving it out for free than concentrating on delivering it for $20. It's pretty good.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I mean, you know, with this whole idea, I think the concept is good. I think, you know, if you go back to the days of golf, shell golf world or whatever it was called back in the day, that was on, of course, on tape delay. So they were cutting two shots, and you can condense it down to like an hour. My issue with this is literally like 75-80% of the time was the guys walking, because that's what golf is. Like, you know, if you're out there for 4 hours, you might be in the game like for a quarter of that time, you know, hitting golf shots, grinding over a putt, whatever it is. The rest of the time, if you're walking. So one of the things that I think could improve it is to put them in golf carts, let them zoom out there, hit shots. If you're going to do it live, let them get out there and hit the golf shot and then move on. Even if you put them in a golf cart together, that way you hear them, you know, bullshit a little bit on the way out there, and then put the caddies in the cart together, whatever. I think that is a way to speed the process up along. The other thing, of course, would just be to add more matches during it. You know, I've already heard plenty of different takes on the different matches you could have. I think that's an endless possibility, especially with golf. But I have an idea, and I don't think that these guys would ever buy into it, and PJ would probably never buy into it because it's not pure golf. But I would love to see some two-man, four-man scrambles with these pro golfers. You know, you play in a lot of scrambles. I play in a lot of scrambles. Everybody out there who plays golf plays in golf scrambles because it's a fun way. You know, do a lot of fundraisers, whatever. But it also is a fun way for everybody to stay involved in the game and not have to grind it out, and it's fun to watch. And to watch these guys on that level play a scramble, I think would be a huge draw, in my opinion. I know it's not pure golf, but, you know, it's not always about being pure golf. It's about making some money. I think that would be a massive draw if you could put some four-man teams together and see how, you know, they could just bash these golf courses. That would be awesome to watch, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be great, two to four-man, because four-man, they could – it's like birdie or better holes, which would be amazing. Because like you said, we saw bad golf. Now you put a two-man or a four-man in there, you don't hit a great golf shot every time, but we might see a lot of great golf shots.
Oh, you're going to see plenty. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll see a lot more camaraderie or talking because, like you said, and I get it, you know, these guys are competitors. They're playing for $9 million. So they're like grinding when they're walking to their balls. They're talking to their caddies. They're not – the whole idea coming into it was like, hey, these guys are going to talk to each other, and we're going to see these guys interact. I think more people were excited about seeing Tiger and Phil interact than Tiger and Phil play against each other in golf.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that. Like, for instance, everyone was excited about the side wagers. The side wagers were a joke, an absolute joke. Like, hey, we're almost 350 yards out on a par five. If you hold this out – it's $1 million.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll make that bet because I'm not going to make it either. Like,
yeah. No. Geez. I mean, some of them were. I mean, like the close to the pin ones, they made a lot of sense.
That should have been already like banked in for like St. Jude's or somebody. Like,
yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that's another thing they could do is bake it in that way and say, you know, it's basically 100K. I don't know if you heard. They did have some good interaction at the beginning, but then I think Tiger got frustrated because he wasn't playing very well and kind of went off into his little Tiger zone a little bit. But I don't know if you heard that some of the banter back and forth, you know, I mean, Tiger was like 100, you know, closest to the pin on this next shot. And fucking Phil goes, K. And he's like, yeah, K. Yeah, yeah, 100,000. Yeah. Like, yeah, when I was doing this for $100, you know, so, yeah. But I mean, some of it was okay as far as that goes, but, and it was, I don't know if you saw, but your boy, Pat Perez was on the cast and so was Charles Barkley. Now that made it, that stuff made it a little bit more interesting to hear. Pat Perez, not the best on the mic, but it was funny to listen to him. Charles Barkley, just funny in general.
Yeah, that part was great, and that's something that they did very well. And you could incorporate more of that. And, like, when Justin Verlander is on Twitter talking trash to Charles Barkley, and Barkley's literally going to go to the first hole and play it, TNT, Bleach Report, let Charles go to the first hole and broadcast this shit.
Yes,
that's the kind of stuff. Like, like you're saying, these matches, you know, we could do two-man scrambles. It could be like Pebble, though. Make it an amateur and a pro and let them go play a scramble together. Like, that would be entertaining.
I think that'd be fun to watch.
Bill Murray and one of these guys with, like, Charles and another. Like, that would be entertaining as hell. All goes to charity because they could raise a crap load of money for these. Right. And that would be awesome because we love golf. We talk about it all the time on this podcast. Like, almost every week when we recap, it's like, Cam Champ, amazing young golfer. Like, we talk about all these young golfers time and time again, and all these good golfers. You know, Bryce is doing his thing, Dustin when he's torching the field. We get to watch that every week. We don't have to see it on a pay-per-view. I pay-per-view for UFC because I want to see two guys beat the crap out of each other and entertain me. Yeah. Like, I want entertainment. I don't need to pay for – like, I don't pay to watch baseball, and I am a baseball fanatic. I probably would never pay to watch baseball. That's the whole point I'm trying to make. You don't need to pay – for the sport, I'm paying for the entertainment factor.
Yeah, I think there's lots of different ways they could go about it better, and this is hopefully the beginning of something that turns into something good, another Wild World of Golf or whatever it is. But I really think that, you know, having some competitions, you know, long drive competitions and just, you know, things like that in there, you know, I mean, I think it would be really fun to watch. Whether or not it happens or not, I guess we'll have to wait and see, but...
It's like you said, we play in a bunch of scrambles. You have live long drive holes. You're close to the pin holes. You have certain holes where it's like, we're going to make a temporary tee box over here. And, you know, you hit it 150 yards, like different little games throughout the game to make it entertaining. That would be fun. Like, I heard the no laying up guys talk about it. Make one hole where they have to play backwards. One, they have to play left-handed, left-handed, play right-handed. That would have been entertaining as hell.
Well, they also
sucked really bad, but
they also suggested like that Charles Barkley would have to hit one shot. So like your opponent could call Charles in for this one shot. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's that would be, amazing. Hilarious. I mean, that would be good TV, but
that's what we need. It's like, the problem is these guys want to win $9 million, so they want to have someone ruin it for them in theory, but there's got to be a way to do this. Like, the idea is great. I'm glad they did it because, like you said, it's only going to get better and it's the building blocks to what happened. Like, if you look at almost anything, especially in sports or anything in general, the first attempt at something rarely ever goes flawlessly. Right. There are always tons of problems, and that's where you build off of them, and that's how you become great and make really good things. Like, I guarantee you, if we listened back to our first podcast, Jesse, it probably really sucked. Bro.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine how bad it was.
Like, it's just one of those things. Like, we're not trying to bash it. It was just like, okay, this wasn't what we wanted it to be. It wasn't, like, the whole thing. But it definitely could be great. There's a lot of scenarios. Like you said, we've heard different people all over the place. We could give our, you know, picks of what we wanted if we wanted to. We don't really need to. There's tons of different ways to do it. The only other thing I'd like to see, which could be really fun because I do it in one of the tournaments we do, it's a two-day tournament, and then they after the first day, after the dinner, when guys have had a few drinks, we do it for fun. And it's called a horse race. I think if you just get, like, they could do it in the Bahamas this weekend. You basically get, you know, 9+ guys and you just keep rotating shots or you play holes, the lowest score is eliminated from the round and you play it all the way until there's one man standing.
Gotcha.
I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because then you stay competitive and it gets really entertaining and the trash talking would be phenomenal in that. Mm-hmm. Like, cause that's how this is. There's like four guys that are all playing on the same hole with you surrounding you while you're like 120 out trying to hit and they don't stop talking. That is fun.
Yeah, that would be – I mean, that would be a good time. I think there's a lot of ways to make golf more watchable, and that's my big thing with this past deal with Tiger and Phil. It was not watchable 75% of the time. Like I said, there were some good aspects of it. You know, if they build off of it, make it better, I think it can be something, but I think there's got to be some major changes involved.
Okay, I won't say we'll pick who we want to see play each other because – I'm probably good with like any group playing chair. I was good with Bowed Over Smiley Kaufman as the precursor. I saw that tweet and I almost fell out of my chair. And like you said, I think the more matches going on, you could cut away and see things. But if you had to pick a course, and it can't be like Augusta, that's too easy, what course would you want to see these guys play? Because you want it to be scoreable, but you want to be entertained.
Yeah, I mean, I think something like, you know, Sawgrass, that's accessible to the public or the general public, if you, you know, willing to pay $400, whatever the green fee is. But, you know, a public golf course that is relatable to people, because, you know, that golf course out in Las Vegas, I think you got to stay at the MGM. You got to pay like $1,000 or something or $500 to play it. I mean, it's not super accessible. You know what I mean? Yes. Sawgrass, a little bit more accessible, just something like that. Something that's, you know, it doesn't have to be a super hard golf course, because usually it's Sawgrass, you know, they're scoring in the double digits under par. So, but I think that would be fun, you know, and it's a golf course they play every year anyway. So let's see how good they are playing a 2-man scramble. You know, can they shoot 16, 18 under 2-man scramble? You know what I mean? I think that'd be awesome.
All right. And I hope we do see it again soon. And I have a feeling we will. I haven't heard any numbers on technically how many buys there were before they got refunded, but that'll definitely have something to do with it as well. But I am curious to see where it goes. Cause I think there's something here. It's just a matter of making it work. It's a good way to fill kind of a month of nothing, but it could be really interesting. All right, let's recap the fall swing real quick. You know, we did the season recap a couple months ago after the last season. We'll do it again after this season, and we'll probably recap this again during that, but we'll do a real brief walkthrough. I'll take one tournament, then Jesse can take another. We can move through our notes here. Kicked off with the Safeway Open. Kevin Tway takes down Ryan Moore and Brad Snedeker in a playoff. Finishes at 14 under, but it was the beginning of seeing some Webb grads and some other young guys play really well, as Sam Ryder and Sanjay both finished 13 under, one shot off. A lot of good young scoring, first time back to Silverado after the fires in Napa.
Yeah, it's also like the beginning of the Bombers. They kind of dominated this fall swing. You know, you'll sense a little bit of a theme going on as we go through these guys, but yeah, Safeway, Kevin Tway's first win of his career. So good for him. 2-year exemption for him. He'll be on tour for a while. And he's a guy who, if he gets the putter going, his ball striking his tee to green game is really always very good. And he can reel off birdie after birdie after birdie if he can knock it in there tight or start making some putts. So be fun to watch him. And then from, you know, go on. You got anything else on the
– okay. No, go for it.
CIMB Classic, like Mark Leishman basically stomped the field. You know, Gary Woodland was the answer, was also in the mix. But he was Leishman was six shots up on those guys. You know, he shot 20 under. He finished at 26 under. I did not see that coming. And Leishman's one of those guys who very, very difficult for me to predict.
Yeah, it was another tournament where Woodland played phenomenal, pretty much the whole fall swing, finished the year strong. Answer, a guy that we've loved all of last year, really one of it, and a bunch of really big weeks in this fall swing we'll talk about. This is the beginning of the 3-week Asia swing where a lot of either sponsored exemptions or no-cut events, which we all hate on this podcast. So that was it. Then we go to the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges where Brooks was dominant, really, really dominant, finished 21 under par. Gary Woodland, again, another great week, 17 under for second place, but Koepka wins by four shots. Never really felt challenged in that event, just ran away with it. And, you know, people thought maybe Justin or someone would you know, repeat or look great. A lot of guys that you thought would have played well kind of struggled with Brooks. He ran away with it.
Yeah, he did. He looked hot. I mean, you called that too, that he was a big game hunter or whatever. That's, he got what, how much did he make there? 1.7 or 1.8 million?
It's like 1.9. I think it was bigger than any WGC and bigger than the US Open. It was yeah. The biggest payday I think you can get out there.
Yeah. Obviously no cut event, but still, I mean, it was very impressive by Brooks that week. After that, there's a dual events, one in China, which is the WGC HBC champions. It's a world, you know, golf cup championship, whatever it is, event. Xander beat Tony Finau, who we thought was gonna finally break through there. After Tony basically choked it away at the end. But there was a huge spread in this tournament too. There's a lot of guys over par, but Xander and Tony were kind of head and shoulders above everybody else at 14 under.
Yeah, Fino had the lead going into Sunday, and I remember staying up and watching some of it, and I went to bed, and he still had like a one-shot lead. But every time Xander was on the tee, he hit it straight. He was hitting great shots in. Tony was spraying it, and, you know, Tony could – he just looked, I don't know if he was uncomfortable or what it was, did not look good there. His wins are coming this year, and I say wins plural. His wins are coming this year. He's playing great golf, and just it wasn't his weekend, but a great finish there. And like you said, it was a really weird deal. I think it was like only six or eight guys under par. The rest were all over par. It seemed like on Sunday, if you weren't under the four guys in contention, because Justin Rose was up there as well, you just fell off. You didn't even care. You just took your check, and you're on your way home.
Yeah.
Like you said, at the same time as the WGC, we had the Sanderson Farms, where our boy, we're going to get a trend because he's on every notes for every tournament the rest of the way. Cam Champ takes it down with a 21 under par, first career PGA Tour win. I believe it was like his second start. He started at the Safeway. I know he had a couple starts last year, like on exemptions, but this was his first as a PGA Tour member. Second event, first tour win, and he looked dominant, looked really, really good. And another trend we're going to see, and yes, this is a watered-down field with the WGC taking place, but a ton of the Web.com recent grads finished very, very well at that event. So it was definitely the start of things to come for this fall swing in the American side of things as Cam Champ, 21 under, first career win.
Yeah, that's very surprising to me that he won that early. Usually takes guys, at least, a couple months to start getting acclimated to actually PGA Tour golf. And obviously, like you said, watered down field, but still, it's a PGA Tour win. The dude he's really good, and it's going to be so much fun to watch him starting to compete with DJ and Koepka and Rose even. These guys obviously get it out there really far, but their game is very good all around. After that, Shriners Hospital for Children Open, Bryson DeChambeau gets the win, 21 under. Patrick Cantlay finished second at 20 under. Ryder was there again. Answer. Champ finished 11 under. Woodland and Neiman came in at 14 under, top 10s. Bryson DeChambeau, man. I mean, like, the dude was obviously very hot at the end of last year. I thought, I don't know what happened to him the last two events of the PGA Tour year. Maybe it was just his head, because obviously his swing is working great. He cleared up whatever it was in his mind and got another damn win, man. How many is that for him this year, like in the calendar year? Is that four?
I believe it's four. I believe he had three on the PGA.
Yeah.
The first year, yeah.
Because he won at Jack's Place. He won the Memorial, right? And then
– yeah, and then he won back-to-back the first two.
Back-to-back, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's either four or five.
Either way, it's insane. His first time playing the event, I believe, it was one of those fields. We had Spieth and a couple other big boys, Ricky, Cooch. A lot of guys, we'll see a lot this year as they're trying to play the new tournaments, the new formats where you have to get so many in so you don't get busted like Spieth did. But it was big because, we didn't really – I don't think we talked about it a ton, but, winning the first two FedEx Cup events for Bryson and then not winning the FedEx Cup was pretty crazy. But he bounced right back and going 21 under, getting it done. The reason we wanted to mention Cantlay is – there is some course history we definitely saw take place this fall, and he was one of them. He loves playing at the Shriner, finished 20 under. He definitely showed it, and so did the other guys you mentioned. Got the OHL Classic. This was kind of a feel-good story for the Always Pressing Pod, a guy we like a lot for cash games. Kuchar. Kuchar gets the W, his first one since 2014. Played really, really well. He didn't dominate on Sunday. We didn't need to. He played around even par, maybe one under. Got the W, didn't have to do much more than that. It was pretty crazy that same weekend, Lee Westwood wins on the Euro Tour, Vijay Singh wins on the Champions Tour, and Bernhard Langer wins on the Charles Schwab Cup Tour. I think Lee Westwood and Kuchar were about both 4 years apart, and a lot of those guys hadn't won in forever. It's kind of a flashback day, seeing all those guys hoist the cup. But the other big take-homes, Cam Champ, T10, another great finish. Emiliano Grillo, who's played really well at the OHL, he finished 15th. And then JJ Spahn, he's been playing really well in the fall swing, finished T3 at this event. And, it was a little over a year ago, JJ was playing really well. Then he got the wrist injury and never bounced back. So maybe this is a sign of things to come for JJ. And he was always a good West Coast player. So we're going to get that West Coast swing started up in January, February. So keep an eye on JJ Spahn.
Yep, for sure, man. Kuchar gets the W. Long time coming for him. Good for him. He's obviously a grinder, been on the PGA Tour for a long time. And, you know, he's an all-around great guy. I mean, you know, good guy. I don't know what you say about Kuchar. From there, we went to the RSM Classic, and Moneybags himself, Charles Howell III, finally gets a win on the second playoff hole. He beat Patrick Rogers, which this is an awesome little nugget you put in the notes here for us. Rogers makes the makes the cut on the number, and then shoots 61-62 on the weekend, which is the lowest 36-hole stretch on the weekend in PGA Tour history. It's pretty incredible. But then he gets beat in the playoff, and Charles was up pretty good going into Sunday and kind of fell apart early, and then Rogers finished real early after shooting 62 and was in the lead, and then Charles came back and ended up winning it in the playoff there. And then you got Cameron Champ finished sixth again. He was in the lead for a while in this one, actually. He had another, I think, pretty low round during this tournament. So he was there again, man. The dude is, I'm telling you, he's legit. It's going to be fun to watch him this year.
Yeah, a couple things on this. Charles Howell, he won it on the second playoff hole, and it was tough. I actually got home. I think football game ended or whatever. I turned the golf on, and he misses birdie putt to win it on 18, birdie putt to win it on the first playoff hole, and then he finally sinks it on the second. I'm just like, oh, man. Because you just had this weird feeling that Chucky wasn't going to get it done. It was just – it was hard because we've rooted for Chucky a lot. He's another kind of – we like Kuchar a lot more, but Chucky's got that kind of same form, consistency that you like to see from a guy like that. So it was a cool fall swing. We got a lot of the young guns playing great, Cam getting the W. But then you had Kuchar, you had Chucky three sticks, you had these guys picking up wins that A, keeps him on the tour longer, B, it's just good to see. First win for Chucky since 2007. Pretty wild.
He had a good mix of guys who are, you know, very green and brand new to the tour, and then those guys who are out there grinding year in and year out, and they get the dubs there and kind of secure themselves, not have to worry about, you know, things for another couple of years, which I don't think Kuchar really ever had to worry about it. But you know, Howell has been kind of borderline. You know, he plays really well early in the season and then usually falls off. So, you know, he's got nothing to worry about now. So we'll see if that changes his mindset going around, you know, this year.
And one last thing on Cam Champ, I think to me, if we had to like give an MVP of the fall swing or something, I'd probably give it to Champ just because of the consistency he showed. I loved it because we talked about it almost every week that this guy's not just a bomber. And yes, he led the web in driving last year. And I believe he's leading the PGA in driving right now. Or he's at least top three or something. But we saw his game. We saw his short game. His putter is going to be volatile, but that's how all these kids are. All these guys, period. But these kids, especially, like, they're really good ball strikers. The in between game can be iffy, and the putter is very sketchy with some of these guys. Like you said with Tway, we've said it all last year. He was always a bargain guy that could be boom or bust, and he finally putted well at Safeway, and there you go. But Cam Champ is definitely a guy that's going to be. He has that feeling to me. He seems better than Patrick Cantlay, but he's kind of like. The way everyone's talking about Patrick Cantlay coming into this last season is kind of how I think Cam Champ's kind of rolling in now. He's the guy everybody wants to see kind of do the thing. So it was really good to see him do it on short courses, big courses, play all his clubs on that RSM. I watched him hit his driving iron almost off every hole. He was scrambling well. The kid's good, and he shot – I want to say it was at St. Jude's, but I could be wrong. He shoots like 9-under on Friday to get back towards the lead or in the lead. And it was straight up out of old school, or it was someone from PGA paid him. He was like, I don't even know what happened. I was just living under par. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. I'm like, this is great. I love this guy already. Perfect.
What about, did you see, I know you saw the quote that, that Club Pro guy made up and put on Twitter about Which Brian one? Gay's driving distance.
Oh, and then all his family members coming out.
Oh my God, dude. I mean, how, like, I don't understand, like, people think that, like, I just don't understand how he gets so butthurt over that. Like, he got, like, I don't know if you saw the press conference for him, but he did, like, a quote unquote press conference, and he took it down because he was basically going to get fucking sued over it. Like, come on, man. And he was off. He was off because he sat down in the press conference. He was like, "Yeah." So, one clarification. I said 282 yards for Brian Gay's driving distance. It's actually 282.9 yards. You know, so apologies there from me. You know, it's
that's outstanding. It's really weird how, because I've seen it when we tweet from the AP handle on Twitter or I do something or whatever, and you don't even have to use their Twitter handle. Just type Brian Gay or type Kevin Tway or something like that. You'll get a family member, usually a wife or a mother, that either favorites it or comments on it or something. It's just like, do you guys literally stalk Twitter and just search their name all day long? Like, that is pretty bad.
It seems like a lot of wasted energy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I feel like a lot of energy is wasted on social media to begin with, but then to sit around and like see what negative things are being said about you as a professional. I don't know, but
yeah, Twitter is a cesspool. But all right, let's move on to the Hero World Challenge. We could probably sit and talk about a lot of the golf for a long time, because this event, I'll be totally honest, Jesse, it is not my most exciting event on the planet. It's 18 golfers. It might be kind of the format we need to see for the match, get, you know, 9 twosomes out there or something. But 18 golfers, I think we have 8 first-timers this year. Interesting field. We'll kind of go over the DraftKings slate here in a minute, but can you give us a little bit of a past event history?
Yeah, so you know, this has had several different names. It's been in the Bahamas since 2015, so that's really all that matters as far as past winners. Last year, Ricky Fowler was your winner at 18 under, 4 shots over Charlie Hoffman. Year before that, Hideki Matsuyama, 2 shots, 18 under over Henrik Stenson. The year before that, Bubba Watson, 25 under, 3 shots over Patrick Reed. You know, like you said, it's only 18 guys or whatever. So to get in the field, you have to be top 11 in the world. So everybody who's top 11 in the world gets in the official Google Golf rankings, gets an invite. Then Tiger, obviously, because he's the host, and then they have sponsors exemptions. So guys that Tiger basically, wants to invite from his foundation or whatever. I'm sure guys who've helped out with his foundation or what, I don't know. And the defending champion gets an automatic invite back.
Okay. Yeah, it's a par 72 course, 7,302 yards. Albany is what they call it, the Albany Championship Golf Course, the fourth year at this event. It's a $3.5 million purse with $1 million going to the winner. So it is a very hefty purse. I don't know how they justify it or how it gets passed, but the 18 players obviously all get paid. Last place gets at least 6 figures, so all guys get 6 figures or more. And somehow they get World Golf Ranking points for this. That part I don't understand. The money, sure, knock yourself out. I don't understand the World Golf Rankings, but that's none of my business, none of my problems. But it's a very, very bomber-esque course. It's wide open. It's an Ernie Els design. It's a links style. It resembles a links style course. It's not a links style course, but it resembles one. Very wide open. You have a lot of bunkers, very white, bright sands like you'd see in the Bahamas. The native area is more kind of, you know, deserty, like you'd see on the Southwest. Very, very sandy there as well. You can play out of a lot of it. It's not pretty. We've seen Tiger in recent years on his comeback trails get in there and gets really nasty. Smaller greens, they say basically it's a second shot golf course. 5 par 5s, 5 par 3s. Almost all of the par 5s are very reachable in 2 for some of these guys. As long as you're not spraying it off the tee, you got great shots in. You want to get on the green, though, because there's different things I read. It's really nasty around the green chipping-wise. It's Bermuda greens, and then the grass around the greens doesn't quite grow properly is the best way Justin Thomas phrased it when he duffed a chip there last year. And Tiger got a bunch of bad chips there as well. So without going super deep on the golf course, though, it's a pretty simple course. Hit it straight, small greens, very puttable greens. Charlie Hoffman said he loved putting on them, so if that tells you anything, that's all you really need to know. But you can get in trouble here, and that's what we've seen in years past with all the different scoring and whatnot. Tiger Woods, he's won this event 5 times, but I don't believe he's won at this course. Like you said, Ricky, Bubba, Hideki, and Jordan, the winners at this course alone. One thing I wanted to mention for the first-timers, in case anybody's curious, you have Bryson, Cantlay, Xander, Jason Day, John Rahm, Finau, Keegan Bradley are your first timers in this event. What kind of key stats are you looking for this week, Jesse?
Here's the issue. You got 18 golfers, okay? You got 18 golfers. I don't know. I feel like you'd be better off just pressing buttons randomly than looking at stats, especially most of these guys have not played since September. Who knows? You know, I mean, that's the issue, obviously, besides the fact that it's is the smallest field in the history of golf. You know, I mean, so, you know, I would look at, you know, some shots gain stats from the last 24 rounds if you're interested, but I don't know. There's like, it's kind of a, just make something up. Hope you throw a dart at the board. It's just nothing to go off of, really.
The biggest thing is just driving accuracy, birdie or better, DraftKings points, eagles, because these par fives, very, very squirrel. Tiger even had two eagles here 2 years ago. Watch the weather, because it is on the ocean. It's wide open, not a ton of trees out there.
It's going to be windy.
Yeah, they're saying Thursday not bad, but Friday good chances of rain and wind. Same with Saturday. Saturday's going to be really nasty, like stormy, windy, and then Sunday's supposed to clear up again. So that could be interesting, making those par fives maybe more like three-shot holes. And thinking about guys that play in the bad Euro weather much better might be an angle you can go with here if you so choose to be a little different. Would be kind of the slight suggestions I would give. I will go over a couple trends we've seen here on fan share and recent events. We'll go back to 2016 at the Hero. There's only 8 players in this field, so that's why it's hard to compare, because not all these guys have played every year or back-to-back years or whatever, but 8 guys played here in 16. Your high DraftKings guy was Hideki, who was a champ. And DJ, Stenson, Ricky, Bubba, all of them had over 100 DraftKings points. And Tiger had 97. Tiger on up had 20 or more birdies. Tiger actually had 24 birdies. He led the field that week. But did not have an eagle, but yet Hideki with 2, DJ with 2, Bubba with 2. So it's just kind of letting you know eagles are very, very gettable out there and something to keep an eye on. And then last year at this tournament – Ricky, who won the thing, had 140 DraftKings points, which is pretty darn good. But Hideki, again, second in DraftKings points, back-to-back tournaments, finishing very, very well at this event. He had an eagle and 22 birdies. Ricky had 30 birdies. He torched the field. Second on birdies was Hideki. But there was only 9 guys that played here last year. They're playing here again this year. Noren was horrible. DJ was horrible. DJ has actually finished really, really bad here. We'll get into that in when we talk DraftKings and whatnot. But DJ has not played well at this event. He might not just care. That's a whole other thing. But that's the other thing. You know, these guys have an automatic 6-figure payday, might not care. They're just here to hang out with Tiger, and we're in the Bahamas where their wives get to go away while it's snowing everywhere else. So
there's
a lot of weird factors to look at it here. But with all that being said, Jesse, let's go quickly through the DraftKings pricing here. We have 18 golfers, 10K and above. You got Justin Rose at 11-1, DJ at 10-5, and Tiger at 10-3. Best way I'll say it is rank them 1 through 3 on how you'd use them.
I mean, I'd probably just put them in the order there. Tiger was not impressive, and he's the last guy that I saw play golf. I know it was a match, but I don't know. I'm just not. I wouldn't pay up $10,300 for Tiger. He's probably going to be super high owned anyways. It's hard to go off of last year. He was $6,500 at this tournament last year because this is when the comeback started for him. So we're basically a year from the start of the comeback, marking with this tournament or whatever. He was 6,500. He was, you know, 31% owned, and that wasn't even like top 10.
Yep.
So I think Rose, if you're up here, but to be honest with you, like, I'll probably avoid this and just try to like do some weird things.
Yeah, leave a lot of money on the table. Do not play cash games.
Right.
If you play cash games, go seek help right now. That's all I want to say is go seek help. Do not play cash.
Yeah, this is like 1v1 in cash. Head-to-heads, maybe.
Head-to-heads are fine. Head-to-heads, yes. Maybe go to those multiplier, like 10-man multipliers, like top 3 win. Do shit like that. Limit your exposure.
I wouldn't do 50-50s.
Yeah, I do like Justin Rose quite a bit, as you said. You know, coming in amazing form. He's got 6 straight top 8 finishes, which is pretty damn good. He had his best finish in 3 attempts at Albany last year, tying for 5th. So I definitely go there. You know, DJ, he's T14 or worse in 2 of his 3 starts here. He had a T3 in 2016. Didn't seem like he cared at the WGC event in China either with the T30. So I don't think DJ cares. Maybe he does. He is by far one of the best golfers out there. But I'm with you. I go Rose. I'd still go DJ over Tiger. I'm not paying that much for Tiger. I don't like what I saw at the match. I just don't. But so I'm with you. I go Rose, DJ, Woods. But I think more balance might be the way to go here, because I think everyone's going to want to get someone up there in the 10K and above.
Yeah, I think, you know, Stars and Scrubs is going to be the most popular approach here. No cut event, whole deal. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
There are some scrubs that really stand out. Let's do the 8 and the 9 case together. We have Ricky Fowler at 98, Justin Thomas at 92, Bryson making his debut at 87, John Rahm making his debut at 81, Ricky Fowler, the defending champion. What do you like in those four guys, Jesse?
I think Bryson is very playable at 8,700. Obviously, he's a guy who has won a lot recently. So the form is there. I mean, he's leading over the last 24 rounds in this field. He's number one in tee to green, number one in ball striking, number one in the pro or off the tee, number one in DraftKings points in this field. He's fourth in putting. I mean, it's all there, but he's probably going to be pretty chalky, especially at that price. So, you know, it just depends if you want to fade him. The thing is, obviously, if you don't have the winner here, just go ahead and don't even worry about looking at potential winnings because you're going to have zero. The lowest guy owned here last year was in the $4.20 max was 13% owned. And the highest guy was Justin Rose at 58% owned. And Ricky last year was over 50% owned in every contest, and he won. So basically, if you didn't have Ricky, just go ahead and count it as a loss. So Bryson, I think, is very playable. I think, you know, if you're trying to go like a little bit contrarian, you just go Rahm. The form coming in is okay. And you just never know with him. I mean, like he could, I think it's worth taking a chance in this field with Rahm. I got really nothing for Justin or Ricky. So probably one of those two wins.
Yeah, Rahm's definitely the contrarian one. You know, he sprays it everywhere, you can get in trouble, but with big fairways, I guess, where you can bomb, you just finished T4 in Dubai, could be very, very interesting. There's no sugarcoating that at all. You know, Bryson, I think, is a great call. He's won 3 of his last 5 events, like we talked about in the recap. I reading something earlier is really interesting. It's his debut here, but he knows the course quite well because he attended the event as a guest spectator last year. So he's one of those guys that kind of clings to Tiger and company, and he's not going to be a complete newbie to this field. Obviously you mentioned Ricky coming in really good form. I think he's gonna be pretty popular as a defending champion, T4 at Shriners, T16 at Mayakoba, playing some really good golf. He's got a defending champion here and a T3 in 2016. So, and a third in 17. So T3 or better in 3 straight years. So I think Ricky definitely has some leverage there if you want to go there, if you want to start there instead of going all the way to the top. And I'll leave Justin alone. I know, Justin, we talked about him in no-cut events. This isn't the same type of thing. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
Okay, if I had to rank him, I'd go Bryson, and then I'd go Ricky, Rahm, and Thomas for me. I think Rahm's the kind of biggest outlier in the group, though.
Funny thing about it is last year coming in this event, Justin Thomas was the – was the highest salary golfers at 11,100. So,
and how things have changed.
Yeah.
Now this part of the field is very intriguing to me. In 7K range, you got Jason Day, Tony Finau, who fits courses like this phenomenally, Xander and Patrick Reed. Like this is a, I'll just be honest. I want some Finau and Xander in my life, like big time. I think both these guys are coming in great form, striking the ball well, fit courses like this phenomenally. We know Xander's going to be in the fairway most of the time because he's not trying to crush it. He's very accurate. And if Finau's not spraying it, which he hasn't been lately, he can take advantage of these par fives. So I like that kind of setup big time. And then I'd put Reed, then Day. I think Reed will go super low owned like he seems to all the time. But he loves playing in fields like this. Reed's been playing in Europe, trying to make all that cash on that race to Dubai. I think he's the highest American finisher ever, and he's very proud of that. So he's definitely let them know that when he comes here because Reed lets everybody know how well he's playing in golf. So I think he fits a field like this very well. He takes this kind of stuff personally. Like, I beat the best of the best, and he wants that to happen. So if I'm going to go anywhere here, I'm going to go Finau, Xander, Reed, then Day. That's how I'd kind of rank these four, especially recent form and whatnot. What do you like in the 7K?
Yeah, I think Finau will be the chalk of the chalk. I could see him being the highest owned golfer on the slate. It would not surprise me one bit. I like him a lot. I mean, he's third in the field in strokes gained total over the last 24, second off the tee, sixth in points. He's actually putting pretty well too. He's third in strokes gained putting over the last 24 in this field. So I think Tony's very interesting, but like I said, I think he'll be chalky. I think that Bryson and him could be the highest owned duo. And that could just be me kind of because I like them so much. Maybe that's where I'm getting that from. But I they're usually popular anyway, so I could see them being the highest stack. Last year it was Rose and Fowler as the highest stack, and they were 86 and 9600 respectively there. So other than that, I mean, I think Day is underpriced for what he really is as a golfer at $7,700 in this field. Major winner, you know, he's won a lot on tour. He can be a guy who you just got to figure it out. He's not playing the very best. He didn't play the very best last year, but he still had at least one win, I think, maybe two wins. So Day at $7,700, I can deal with as a little bit of a potentially lower own play. So for me, Day and Finau in this range.
Okay. Let's go to 6K and above, and there's going to be some massive chalk at $6,300. But, yeah, Hideki, who I just mentioned, has finished phenomenally DraftKings-wise in back-to-back events, second in DraftKings scoring, $6,900. Yeah, Cantlay at 67, Stenson at 66, Noren at 65, Bubba at 64. Big old Gary Woodland is only $6,300, and he probably is coming in the best form in the entire field. And I might not be talking too far to school there. And then Keegan Bradley at 62 is still – just tells you how deep the field is, I guess, but it's Keegan. Okay, if you have to look at the 6K range, Jesse, how do you evaluate it?
Yeah, it's you know, kind of pick your poison. I can get with almost all of these guys, especially Hideki at 6,900, past winner here. He's not playing terribly. He's fourth in the field, tee to green over the last 24, second in ball striking, first in approach, middle of the pack in putting. So I think Hideki, he'll probably be popular, but at 6,900, I like him quite a bit. Cantlay, another guy, really good ball striker if he gets it going. Woodland, you're going to mention him, talk about him, I'm sure. But he'll be probably very high owned as well at 6,300. That price is stupid for his current form. Bubba, another guy who's won here, 6,400. He's a course history guy. You know, if he plays well at some place, he can continue that for some reason. So at 6,400, I like me some Bubba as well.
Yeah, Bubba's one of my favorite players here. You know, like you said, a past winner in 16, he finished T6 here last year. So, like you said, we've talked about it time and time with Bubba. He is a course history nut. So I think Bubba's in a really good spot here. He's taking a lot of time off, which is, could be good, could be bad. I think Bubba's a very good player because he's going to get surrounded by guys who love Gary Woodland. I'm one of them. But I think Bubba gives you a lot of leverage in that situation. And then you got guys like Keegan Bradley at 62, I think is sneaky just for the fact that people aren't going to want to play him. They're going to play Gary Woodland. So it's interesting. I just don't know if Bradley has what it takes to like T5 it here, where Bubba does. Noren's interesting. Didn't have his best of debuts here last year. T12 out of a field of 18 is not ideal. Good finishes over in Europe to finish the year up. I think Stenson's very interesting at 66. He was battling some injuries towards the end of the year. He just finished T12 in Dubai. He finished 17th here last year, but a second place in 16. I think if the weather gets interesting, guys like Stenson can be very interesting. So keep that in mind there. My favorite guy out here, though, will be Bubba. You mentioned Hideki. You mentioned Cantlay. They're all in play. But I do like Bubba down here at 64. I think he's going to go well overlooked. I don't hate Woodland at all, but if you're going to go really chalky up there, you're going to have to be different. I don't think Woodland wins here. I think he could finish very well. I think Bubba can win here, and that's the difference at 6,400 bucks. All right, that wraps up all 18 golfers, Jesse. let's have a little fun with this. 8K and above, what's one guy you want nothing to do with?
Nothing to do with. I'm gonna go with Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I'm going JT as well. 7K and below, one guy you want nothing to do with.
For me, it's Reed, but that's just my hatred for Reed as well.
Mine's gonna probably be Alexander Noren. I think that's where I'll go on that one. But I think Reed's sneaky GPP wise. 8K and above. Who's the one guy not named Bryson DeChambeau you have to have? established that.
That's fucked up, dude.
We're both going to take him, so I want to mix it up a little bit.
AK and above, I'll go with Rahm.
I think that's a great GPP play. I think Rahm's a phenomenal. I think if you went Bryson, Rahm, Tony, and Reed, you'll have a very unique lineup. But maybe. I like the. I like the Rahm call. If I'm not, if you took Rahm, I'll say Ricky Fowler. We talked course horses with Bubba. I think Ricky is a very, very course history type guy at this place. So Ricky at 98 will probably be very chalky though. All right, 7K and a blow, not named Tony Finau. Who do you like?
You mean 8K and a below 8K, basically? Yeah. Okay, gotcha. I'll go with Hideki.
Okay. We mentioned Bubba at 64, who I love. I'll go Xander at 73. I think he's a very solid look as well. Let's just have some fun with this. Who do you have winning the whole thing?
Tony Finau.
Okay, how about this? Give me your top five. Doesn't have to be in any order. Just give me your top five. Don't worry about Bryce.
Finau, Bryson, Bubba. I'm going to throw Cantlay in there. And then Rose.
I go Finau, Bryson, Bubba, Xander. I like Rose too. I'll go Rose. I know it sounds pretty easy since we picked almost the same group, but it's 18 golfers. So how hard can it be? Let's see. What else can we do? How much money do you think's left on the winning roster?
That's a great question. Let me check something real quick. Yeah. So last year, 22% of lineups had 50,000, 18% of lineups or used 50,000 in salary. 18% of lineups left $100 on the table. 12% of lineups left $200 on the table. So you're at 52% right there. I would say between, I'm going to give you a range. I'm going to say between $1,000 and $500 left on the table.
Yeah, that's fair. You got any other thoughts on this one? Because we could probably go back and forth on weird prop bets that we don't exist.
I don't. The GPPs here are bad. But, you know, DraftKings is so, like, enamored with football. They won't put up any good NBA hardly contests until football's over with. So, I mean, that, like, it's just – it sucks. But long story short, if you're playing this event, especially if you're like, doing some multi-entry big field deals, the $5, not terrible. It's $25,000 the first. If you're doing that, I'm definitely leaving quite a bit of money on the table because, I mean, obviously, your chances of having a duplicate lineup are super high in this. I mean, so you might as well at least try to be a little bit different because you never know.
Yep, I feel you there. But with that being said, we'll wrap up this week. We recap the match, we recap the fall swing, we preview the Hero World Challenge for you, and in a couple weeks we'll record the preview to the next season. Might have another couple of things lined up in the next couple of months we've been talking about before the podcast. But go check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. I'm Matt Bedientrick, and the podcast is Always Press DFS. Join us in the SD Slack chat. It's free. Just ask for an invite. We'll help you get in there. We can answer any ownership questions, anything else you have on this week, anything golf-related, whatever you got. Just come let us know. With that being said, this is the Always Pressing PGA DFS podcast. We'll catch you guys later. Show those on all night to the morning.